Welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast number 331. Yeah, that's going to hurt, Hodgie. That's going to hurt. On the way, sharp blades and other dubious puns, social shambles, and sailing closer to the wind. My name is Michael Bailey, and joining us here this Monday at Archant Towers, we have my Norwich City corresponding colleague, David Freezer. Hello, Dave.
Morning, afternoon, it doesn't really matter what time of day it is, does it, in podcast world?
It's just day. And far-flung, travelling journo hack, Hodgie, Stuart Hodge, he of former commentary Norwich City fame and Scottish brogue, and back in the fine county for a wee spell.
Yeah, I'm not actually wearing brogues, but no. Yeah. And yeah, it can be night in podcast land as well, and I hope to bring a bit of that darkness with me.
Glasgow darkness.
This has the potential to be a dark podcast, let's be honest. But there we go. Anyway, glad everyone's well. We should probably say a quick apologies. Paddy David isn't with us today. Hasn't been with us for many of our pods yet. It's purely a rotoring issue and the problem with when there's so many midweek games and whatnot. So all being well, of course, over the coming weeks, most definitely, he's the first name on the team sheet when he's fit and available. Paddy will be joining us very soon. In the meantime, you'll have to make do with us three. Just before we get stuck into the proper stuff, remember you can get in touch with us all here to share your thoughts and set the agenda. Just send an email to thepinken@archant.co.uk or get in touch via all the possible social media channels you can imagine, be it the Pinken or our personal profiles. And make sure you don't miss a single podcast this summer and through the season by subscribing. You can find all the details at pinken.com/podcast. So we'll start with that was the week that was, and we'll start with the end and the painful bit, Dave. Sheffield United, Bramall Lane. So clearly a lot of people who didn't go to the game will have seen the result. They'll be Norwich fans, they want Norwich to do well, and they'll be like, oh, for goodness sake, or worse, Norwich lost again. Oh, this is an issue. Look at the table. Oh, God. So is it all really that bad?
Ooh, yeah, it's not been a fun weekend. You know, 1 point from the opening three games has definitely sort of brought all those worries back to the surface that were bubbling away for a lot of people. But, you know, if you are honest about it, they could have won all three of these games as well. And possibly even should. They should have won at Birmingham. Clearly they shot themselves in the foot against West Brom, and eventually they did shoot themselves in the foot again against Sheffield United. You watch that final goal back, and in amongst the madness of a 93rd minute goal mouth scramble, it was just a collective switching off. I think they thought they had the job done. Ben Marshall doesn't deal with the cross coming in. Grant Hanley doesn't stop McGoldrick's cross coming in. Krull doesn't react to the cross quickly enough. Closer isn't a cross to Billy Sharp quickly enough. And they're all to blame for that goal. So I think that's the big reason that everyone's so worried this Monday morning, because we thought the defence wasn't going to be the issue. Everyone talked about scoring goals, didn't they? And you can see from watching them that they've got a striker in Jordan Rhodes who is playing like a proper striker. So the balance still isn't there.
No, balance. I mean, Norwich haven't kept a clean sheet away from home since January. They also haven't won away from home since late January either. But I imagine the two were both Brentford away at the end of January.
Another one for you. It's now 10 games without a win away from home for Norwich City, which is their worst league run in the second tier for 20 years.
Really? Really?
Sorry, repeat that.
So, it's now 10 games without a win away from home for Norwich City, drawn 6 and lost 4. That's their worst league run. Yeah.
So Norwich is worst one. I was going to say, I'd be amazed if no one else in the Championship.
Oh, yeah.
Where have you got that from, Stuart?
From NCFC Numbers, a new Twitter account that's started up. It's quite cool.
You should get a coffee out of that, shouldn't you?
Yeah, hopefully. So, yeah, if you guys are, and if you're stato-minded, I would say it's a good follow. So account is at NCFC Numbers. Nice and easy.
Oh, there you go. All right. Plug it. Interesting point, though. I mean, because I saw the debate on Twitter as well about calendar stats and whether we should read anything into it, because come the end of a season, it's a new set of players, it's a new season, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. But to me, I don't think you can ignore calendar stats, because ultimately it's a trend. Maybe, you know, it's not quite as important as what you get the start of the season to the end of the season, but still it's something to read into more than maybe one or two games, as we're dealing with at the start of the Championship this season.
Yeah, you've got to read it. I mean, stats are there, I suppose, lies, damn lies, and statistics as a point. But see, coming back to what you said as well, Dave, I mean, the balance thing is just, it's not one of these things that, I mean, last season you could have said, yeah, the club is in transition, blah, 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 maybe finding its feet, maybe finding a style. But second season, you feel that Daniel Farke had to start with a cohesive idea, a plan. And I think there's the idea of a plan, but the players don't seem to be able to implement it in a way where we can defend at one end and score at the other. Norwich City look really cavalier, really entertaining this season when they've got the ball going forward. O'Neill Hernandez has been godlike in his performances. It's been a real positive. Norwich City fans traditionally always love the flying wingers that can do that kind of thing. However, after the change last season where we went in the record-breaking run of clean sheets, that proved that definitely Daniel Farke has the ability to adapt tactically, which is important for a manager. However, you've got to do both simultaneously. You've got to be able to defend and you've got to be able to attack. And I've not seen enough evidence that Norwich City can do both on the field at the same time under this head coach, and that has to be the big worry.
The tricky thing for me is we you mentioned it with the goal. We had about 8 individual errors probably in the 93rd minute. We had individual errors at Birmingham and especially against West Brom. And that's not really, I don't see it in the same way as the start of last season where Norwich looked horrifically naive and it was like, you can't play like this, you're just going to get turned over. Norwich can keep playing like this, and you'd think if they just iron out the individual errors, then they will start to turn their results around. But why do players make individual errors like that? Is it because they're not good enough? Is it because they're still warming up? Well, is it something that you can just correct, or is it a symptom of a player not being good enough?
Yeah, it's an easy out for managers, I always think. Individual errors, that's football. That's how the game works. Somebody has to do something wrong for someone to score, generally, don't they? So it's difficult in that Norwich have been very much in all of these games. If they'd have lost 7-1 to West Brom, like QPR imploded and did on Saturday.
Tony Leisner, by the way, just pointing that out. That looks like a good escape.
Yeah. Oh dear. Well, he's quite one-dimensional, isn't he? He's just a big unit.
I don't know what he is on the basis of Saturday. I recommend if anyone hasn't seen the goals from Saturday and QPR smashing, Tony Leisner is the QPR captain. Mm. I think he's now wearing number 37. You won't miss him. His second half performance in terms of defensive operations and those goals is quite something to behold. Anyway, yeah, move it on.
Yeah, maybe there's a piece further down the road if things continue to go badly as to whether the German second tier is actually any good, but we'll park that one for the moment. Yeah, I mean, you look at the chances missed again, as much as we're saying the goals are coming, that's fine. I mean, Moritz Leitner was a mile offside anyway, but he somehow missed a golden chance one-on-one when he had Pukki and Hernandez to his left anyway. Jordan Rhodes, of course, hits the post and Pukki didn't quite manage to turn it in. So, yeah, I mean, football is always going to come down to individual errors. As I say, I don't really like managers doing it. Alex Neil did it a lot, didn't he? Because it was constantly shifting the blame from him in any terms of tactical sense to, well, you know, the players aren't executing it. And, you know, that's how football works, essentially. So, really, you need to be putting the tactical plan in place to mitigate against those individual errors and be far enough in front. But for me, Saturday, rather than generalising across the board, I think Sheffield United wanted it more. They just had that extra bit of desire. They forced the ball into the back of the net, and I almost think Daniel could probably take a bit of blame with the substitutions. Although I think Alex Tetti had a bit cramped, didn't he? Yeah. So that's why Ben Godfrey came on. But I don't know why Marco Stiepermann came on. I thought that was quite a strange one. And they did kind of sit back, and there was a point in the first half where there'd been about, you know, either side of half time, I thought there's about half an hour of good performance here. Whereas if they go and nick a winner, this is going to be one of the best away performances under Daniel Farke. They didn't. They regressed. Sheffield United kicked on, and in the end, they did deserve the win.
He probably didn't make the change quick enough with Tetti, because he looked a bit shot in terms of, you know, his fitness probably about 10 minutes earlier, and I saw someone mention that point on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine margins, as Dave said, but a couple of points for me. First one, that 3-on-1. If I do that at 5-a-side, I'm embarrassed. Like, that I've shown that level of naivety, offside or not. I mean, it would have counted. It's pretty galling, really. And secondly, what is Marco Stieperman as a footballer? Like, what is he? I mean, I just don't understand the kind of player that he is. He's tall and he's left-footed. And he kind of plays in various positions to varying degrees of ability. Like, I just don't really get him. Like, and I'm not attacking the guy. He obviously goes out and he's a professional, and I'm not casting any aspersions on that side of it. But I mean, most modern footballers, you'll say, even if they're a versatile player, a kind of jack-of-all-trades type, you'll say, right, that's their identity, that's what they do. And when he came in, when I saw that, what I was thinking as a kind of parallel for me would maybe be a bit like a Charlie Mulgrew type. So he's left-sided, maybe not with the free kick or the dead ball prowess of Mulgrew, but left-sided, defensive-minded, can play at left-back but fairly slow, can play at centre-half a bit, which Stieperman doesn't really, can play maybe in the defensive zones of midfield. But Stieperman's been all over the place. Like, and I don't understand what he is. Also, increasingly, having seen more of him, I don't really see what he brings to the table in terms of improving the team.
I think there's an issue with a lot of question marks over Marco and what he does and what he brings when you then look at, say, Ben Godfrey, Louis Thompson players that we do see what they can bring and do, and then they're not involved. But that's a debate for another time, possibly.
I'd been criticising him in the first half against Stevenage in the Cup game, hadn't I, on Twitter, and then literally seconds later he scored. But it, you know, was put on an absolute plate for him by Cantwell, and I could have scored that goal. He was 1 yard out. You know, it was just a case of missing the header, wasn't it? But otherwise, yeah, I mean, when he came on Saturday, there were a couple of nice attacking touches when you thought, there might be a bit of brightness there. But the one that sticks in my mind is I think it was with Jamal Lewis he linked, and then he started a 1-2 with Timo Pukki, who pressed forward, and Stieperman just looked at him and stood still. And rather than pushing forward into the left wing space that was ahead of him, he just stopped. So I think that we're probably just seeing someone who's not got the intensity for the Championship, and that's quite often what seems to be the problem with these German second tier players. It takes them quite a while to realise that if you go to a place like Bramall Lane, you've got to play 100% the whole game if you want to get a result, because, I mean, the noise was deafening at the end there. Those supporters sucked that goal into the net in the end. It's about intensity in the Championship, isn't it?
I do have an issue with the... I was going to bring it on later and in our gongs of the week, but with the offside, because it was such a... it's typical Norwich that they get a situation like that, which should not in any way be allowed, not at the time. Complete gift horse, and they still can't take advantage. And I'm sat here going, well, I don't want to include it, because literally we should be in a situation where the sport can check that sort of stuff and go, well, that's ridiculous, no. And we'd have had an almighty... But even then, Norwich couldn't take advantage of it. So there we go. It does frustrate me.
Can I just flag something up before we move on? Yeah. Earlier on, did you say that they conceded one clean sheet in 2018 away from home?
I think the last clean sheet, well, I thought, was at Brentford back in...
No, I think they've kept four clean sheets this year. Chelsea, Brentford, Bristol City, Preston. I did just check all those, but off the top of my head I thought, oh, that doesn't sound right.
Fair play, I saw
that tweet doing the round, so I think somebody has got that wrong.
Chelsea, Bristol City, Brentford, so that would be one clean sheet away from home since January.
Since January, I see. Okay, I thought you meant
that's it. No, I probably did get it wrong. Yeah,
okay, right.
Anyway, but yes,
good pedantry, lads.
Chelsea was 1-1 after. Chelsea was 1-1.
0-0.
No, wasn't Jamal equalised away from home?
1-1. Yeah. At home. Yeah, that's right.
We're in a dead end, Dave. We're in a dead end. Quick, move on. Norwich did progress against Stevenage in the Cup. That was great news. That also happened this week. And what a reward as well. A trip to Cardiff a few days before the Derby game, just after they played Marco Bielsa's Leeds. Oh, God. Why didn't you just lose? What else are we supposed to say? What a ridiculous... I mean, it's literally going to screw everyone over. Yeah, great. Well, there you go. So tell me something positive about the Cardiff game, Stu.
Wales is nice. Yeah.
We'll literally physically see it. But
I quite like Wales. I like Neil Warnock. I think he's a good character in the game. And he was very entertaining after the Newcastle game at the weekend, which was full of meaty challenges, by the way.
A nod to Josh Murphy, who was a man of the match in that game and seemed to be lively. Of course, James Maddison scored his first Premier League goal. We don't want to dwell on these things. They're far too old.
I mean, Josh continues to play like that and is one of their key players. He may not even play in the cup game, which would take away the angle. So, I mean, Cardiff have probably got quite a few passengers from the Championship days anyway that will need a game. But Josh will clearly be desperate to play in that game. I mean, if he starts, I don't bet anymore, but I may break that to put money on him scoring at some point.
Especially given in that competition, he is absolutely lightning in terms of goals and always has been.
Oh, yes, true, yeah. Was he top scorer last year?
He was in the EFL Team of the Season, EFL Cup. Wow! EFL Cup, Carabao That's Cup right. Team of the Season last season.
He's alongside big names like Hazard and stuff, wasn't he? Yeah.
He is prolific in the League Cup. Yay! So good for him. And of course, Daniel Farke said that one of his plus points for the draw was to go and see Neil Warnock again, so that's always good. And just finally, for That Was a Week That Was, a big shout out to Mr. Gary Smith, who lives in Victoria, Australia. He saw how terribly excited I got about pineapple bounties. Photographer Paul Chesterton, photographer extraordinaire, told us how good pineapple bounties were while he was at the World Cup in Russia, and brought me one over, as well as a lot of other people, and it was as good as it tasted. Gary's emailed me to say, "Hi Michael, if you love the pineapple bounty bars from Russia, try pineapple lumps from Australia. Personal favourite of mine." Keep up the good
work. It's not a creative name, is it?
Pineapple lumps. I mean, these look amazing. I am so excited, but what I must say, Gary, thank you so much for going to the trouble and no doubt considerable expense. So
are they chocolate-coated pineapple lumps?
Yes. They sort of look, what do they look like? They look like sort of Reason chews, but they've got pineapple in the middle.
I need to get Fergie from Black Eyed Peas to promote these, don't they?
My lovely pineapple lumps.
Yep. So, Gary, thank you so much. I'm definitely going to eat all those and not share them at all. And I'll tell everyone how good they are and they can source their own. But, Gary, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. I'll let you know how I feel about them. I'm sure I'll love them. Gongs of the week, then. Let's rattle through these because we've probably covered most points. But our Duncan of the week, our big Duncan Forbes hero of the week. Rather glibly, I've put Yannick Wiltschut for his... you say it, Stuart, his name.
Yannick Wiltschut.
Yeah, whatever. He scored Bolton's winner at Reading. That's his second goal in three league games. And yes, he is still a Norwich player. It's just the way it goes, isn't it? Actually, worth pointing out, Norwich made the point of saying that there was a recall on Yannick in January, because if he did really well over the first half of the season, they can see if they can maybe sell him. So who knows? Yeah, could be a bit of interest at this, right?
That would make sense. Just a question. Did you get me to do the Wiltschut thing after he totally rinsed me at his introductory press conference? Do you remember that?
Did he rinse you? I thought you got it bang on.
Oh, no, he didn't rinse me. The pronunciation was spot on. But then I said, yeah, it's a bit easier for me because I'm Scottish. And then he went, oh, you don't say.
Lots of things are, Stuart. Lots of things are. Hero?
Hero.
I was struggling.
I've got two.
Go on.
Right, Coop and Duck. For the Daniel Farke rap. That is some piece of work, lads. Major, major kudos on that.
Talented boys anyway, but that is a fantastic effort.
Made me want to buy a Parker. That's what it did.
it's wonderful. You can catch it on YouTube. I've tweeted it. We'll retweet it. It's definitely, you'll see it all around. It was someone quite big retweeted it, I saw, and I can't remember who it was now.
Are we talking Rob Butler big or bigger?
Bigger than Rob.
Bigger than Rob.
Humphrey.
Wasn't Jake. And I can't remember. It was Georgie Bingham. That why it surprised me. Georgie Bingham retweeted it. But she's an Ipswich fan, so she might have just been mocking it.
Nobody's perfect, though.
Well done, Georgie. Well done, Coop and Duck. Dave, have you thought of a hero in the meantime?
I have. Jamal Lewis, for me, if we're thinking Norwich City-wise. 90 minutes?
He didn't come off.
So yeah, he managed to get through the 90 minutes. And considering the guy had no pre-season... he did really well. One of his better performances, probably. I mean, because he did tail off, was tired by the end of last season. But it was great to see a proper left back, you know, immediately put James Husband's performance at Birmingham in the shade, and as well as, you know, Max Aaron survived at left back in the cup. It was clear to see that Jamal is a proper left back, left footed, can get forward, can defend, positionally just knows where he should be, and he's solved a big issue for Daniel Farker really there. Hopefully now, once he continues to kick on fitness wise, we can see him continue to develop as a player, because he still does have plenty of room for progress. Particularly, I want to start seeing him swing the ball into the box nice and early. If you think Trent Alexander-Arnold for Liverpool last year, his success, he was obviously on the other side of the pitch from the right, but he's great at just getting a nice and early crossing. So that's what I'd like to see Jamal trying to do, try and get the ball on Jordan Rhodes' head as much as possible and kick on, but hopefully he stays fit now.
Yeah, spot on. And having had my, and I obviously still have my doubts about Jamal and exactly where his level is, I thought he was excellent on his return on Saturday, most definitely. Kevin Muscat, villain of the week.
The linesman that didn't lift the flag that made us sit and suffer through that sort of 3-on-1 madness. I'm going to absolve the Norwich City cohort of any blame and say it's the linesman's fault. He should have lifted the flag and prevented that travesty from happening.
Just bring in VAR. Bring in VAR. Sooner the better, and we can have to stop having silly debates about... Because even then, Daniel's going, well, if we'd taken this chance, and I'm like, well, yeah, but he shouldn't have had this chance. And it'd have been the other way around and they'd scored it. You've been absolutely bad. Bouncing off the walls, so it's irrelevant. Anyway, Dave, you're a villain?
Well, I mean, Chris Wilder's the obvious option.
Always, always.
Yeah, every week of the season. He's pantomime villain, isn't he? But frankly, if he's your manager, I'd imagine you'd love him. Same as if you're a supporter of a team that Neil Warnock is in charge of, because he's a winner and he's desperate to win, and he made the most of that moment. You know, similar to Jurgen Klopp when Liverpool scored the fifth at Carrow Road, Liverpool fans absolutely bloody loved it, didn't they? That he'd lost his glasses in the chaos. And equally, if Norwich have a manager who... You know, if Norwich had scored the winner at Bramall Lane in the third minute of injury time, Daniel Farker wasn't going to just calmly go over and shake hands, was he? He would have gone bonkers as well, as all those people would in the away end. So it's the same on the pitch. You know, everybody hated playing Grant Holt, but Norwich fans loved him. Norwich fans knew exactly when Grant Holt was buying fouls by sticking his backside into defenders and going down easily. That was an art that Grant had pretty much perfected. Malky Mackay did it as a defender as well. Norwich fans knew exactly when he was just having a little tug at a player from behind, pulling their shirt at a corner or whatever, but because he was so good at it, he got away. So it's the dark arts. You've got to master them correctly in football, haven't you?
I've got to say, so I've got a wee niece, and I was watching her the other day, and we watched an episode of Teletubbies, and it was called Bottom Bumping. And it kind of reminded me of... where they bumped...
We don't get this for Paddy.
No. Where they bumped bottoms, and it kind of reminded me of Grant Holt style of play, bottom bumping into the defender and then winning the free kick. That's the way my head works.
It was certainly never accurate to say backing in, that was true. I've flagged up David McGoldrick because... I have to say I was sweating profusely at the end of yesterday's game, not just literally, because before the game we'd done our team news live in the pool car because we were actually late arriving to Bramall Lane, and I think on there I said David McGoldrick did really well for Ipswich at not actually achieving anything while he was there, and obviously that got picked up and then flagged around Twitter. I might have retweeted it because I thought, well, yeah, it's quite a funny line. And then of course he comes on, game at 1-1. And I have to say, I was, without really seeing the goal, I was just praying when it had gone in that it wasn't David McGoldrick, because that would have, you know, pretty much been my fault. I'd have actually claimed partial responsibility for the goal. In the end, all he did was put the ball in for an assist, which is still quite bad.
Perfectly, so, though, didn't he? Cushioned it perfectly for Billy Sharp. He had, right. There was one place where he could put that for Sharp to put the ball in the net, because he was outnumbered, and he managed to put it in the right place. Yeah. So fair play to him.
Fair play indeed. It's just a shame Ben Marshall didn't defend him properly. But there we go. And Simeon Jackson, moment of the week. I mean, I've said the offside. We've already discussed that. Any other ones? Obviously, apart from Billy Sharp. Killing us all at the end.
Yeah, can I be a bit self-indulgent here? My moment of the week was arriving into Norwich Station and getting back in the fair city.
And here all week?
Here all week, here till next Monday.
Two games to take in.
That's the one. I'm going to have a wee chat with Alec again. Should be fun.
Always fun having a chat with Alec. You got a moment of the week?
I would say moment of the week, probably I'd go to Teemu Pukki's goal against Stevenage, finally putting that one to bed with a really nice finish, and I think he's starting to convince Norwich fans that he was a good signing, particularly on a free.
Yeah.
And he played an important part in the goal as well. But I mean, you could equally say Anil Hernandez turning Chris Basham, inside out ahead of the cross for Jordan Rhodes. So amongst it all, there's still a few attacking bright spots, aren't there?
It was a lovely goal. Just didn't matter. Well done, Jordan, for celebrating it.
And he started it as well, didn't he? With the header down in midfield.
Yeah. So. As did Ben Marshall, I think, with the ball up from there. So, you know, that bit's all right.
Good stuff, yeah. So maybe Ben Marshall should be further forward.
Who's the better Marshall? David or Ben? In terms of their Canary career.
Ooh, like, David Marshall was pretty good. He was quite well liked here, yeah. I think Norwich fans thought he might kick on a bit more in his career than he did, but I suppose he's played a fair chunk of Premier League games.
Yeah, in that season he was the Cardiff keeper in the Premier League. He was outstanding. He was probably the best keeper in the league that season.
Ben's got a way to go before he can hit that level, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's early doors, though.
On the sidelines, gents, deadline day two, the return again, or more. The only real thing we need to touch on here, Tim Klose, being linked quite heavily, especially in the German press and big German press as well, with Hannover. From what I can tell, there is certainly something going on. And I guess there's decisions to be made, because if Hannover are, you know, offering a deal that is appealing to Tim, when you consider that Tim is out of contract in the summer, then that's going to appeal to him. It's obviously the German Bundesliga as well, isn't it? Hannover in the top flight. So, you know, that's a big move. And I'm sure they'll be paying him reasonably for it as well. Likewise, Norwich probably... Would they actually be able to offer Tim a new deal? That strikes me as unlikely in my head, given Tim is 30 and the way Norwich are trying to do things. Although, of course, they have made exceptions, like with Alex Tetti. But also, in the actual short term, could they really afford to lose Tim Klose now, when, you know, they've just had a difficult defeat, let's be honest? And surely, and I'm certain about this, that Norwich would have to bring in someone else if Tim did go. Who would that be? If it's an English player, at least maybe you save yourself one of your homegrown heart issues.
I think with Tim, see, when Tim Klose started at Norwich City and he looked like a Rolls Royce in the Premier League, everyone thought he was going to come down to the Championship, perhaps himself included, and walk it. I think there was a lot of people who thought he would make a massive difference in this league. What you found out is he was getting found out at places like Burton Albion, where a mistake in that... I remember the game in that horrible away strip, which some people liked. And I think that's the thing. Tim Klose is a wonderful player. Right, there's no doubt he's one of the more talented members of the Norwich City squad. However, if money comes in for him, with the age he's at and the fact that Norwich City are trying to run the club sustainably, that's Stuart Webber's sort of mantra and the way he's trying to do things, I think he'll go. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I think Norwich City will try to replace him with someone maybe younger, hungrier, and where there's a bit more value in terms of the transfer potential increase or whatever.
Unequivocal no, do not sell him from me. I don't think they should even consider it, unless Tim is agitating for a move, which is possible. You know, if he wants to ever play for Switzerland again, he needs to get back into the top flight somewhere, in one of the big leagues, as the Switzerland setup have made pretty clear to him in the last couple of years, and that's something that he's taken on the chin and got on with. I actually think he's been better than Hanley so far this season, although of course Grant had a heavily disrupted pre-season, so that there was that. I think Tim's looked as fit as he ever has done for Norwich, because he had a full pre-season unlike last year, and he looks fit and sharp. And there was a moment just after Norwich equalised Saturday, wasn't there, where in the space of about 5 seconds, Hanley and then Klose made heroic blocks to almost certainly deny goals, I would have thought. I think I can't remember who they were from, which way round it was, but anyway, they both made very, very good blocks. And I still think Hanley and Klose, once they've had just got a little bit more time in the tank, is going to be one of the better central defensive partnerships in the league. And I think the reaction from some people saying yes, sell Tim, is just reactionary to Saturday in the hurt. You know, this isn't a 4-0 defeat at Millwall, where they've been absolutely tanked and embarrassed. I, you know, Tim, of course, didn't do particularly well for that goal, but he did no worse than anyone else in the defence. That was a collective failing. They switched off for that goal. So I don't think Tim should take any more than anyone else. So unless Stuart Webber has got a list in front of him where he's confident he can bring in two good options, one of them presumably homegrown, and get those deals done before deadline day, then I wouldn't even consider selling Tim Closer.
Yeah, just to sort of add that point, I think Tim Closer has improved his game, see, when it comes to the blocks and the nitty-gritty of the Championship, the kick it, head it, whatever. I think he's got a lot better at that. And I'm not saying sort of whether we should sell him or not. I'm just saying that I think he will go if enough money comes in.
Which is, they have to be so... You're right, sorry, Dave. They have to be so careful because of what that says, and we understand, you know, the pressures that are on the club, but by the same token, you can have all the money in the bank that you need and want, and more is sometimes better. But the signal, I guess, in a way, of losing a senior player who's established, and you'd like to think Norwich could still build off for the rest of this season. When, let's be honest, I'm sure whatever's on the table would probably still be on the table for Tim when he's a free agent next season, and Norwich have got proper time to do it, because at the moment they're either going to be able to loan someone in, because they can't buy someone in from any other English clubs, or they can buy from abroad. So, and then you're talking about adaptation time and all this sort of stuff, and let's be honest, Norwich, you know, had Norwich won their first three games, then maybe we could have thought, all right, we'll take your time. But no, at the moment there is enough of the fan base going, all right, this hasn't, you know, started like a house on fire. You just don't need the extra pressure on yourselves, personally. But it's a big call, and people get paid a lot of money to make big calls.
Well, clearly the wages is an issue with him.
He's
probably on, well, no, I don't want to put a figure on it, but he signed in the Premier League for nearly £8 million. He's going to be on big wages, and there may have been a relegation clause in there. There should have been. But still, he'll be on high wages. But I think Norwich fans have had enough of worrying about wages and finances, and Steve Stern and Stuart Webber have said, you know, things are sorted, mostly on that point. So if he plays out the remainder of his contract and then goes next summer because Norwich haven't got near the promotion mix, I'd imagine most people wish him well. Two final quick points. Pinkin.com, we've got a poll running on this, so let us know what you think, whether they should be selling or not. That's up there Monday lunchtime, so you'll find that nice and easy. And secondly, if I put it like this, if they beat Preston 2-0 at Carrow Road Wednesday night, no one will want Tim Close to leave.
No, and likewise, if they'd have drawn on Saturday, to be honest, I would imagine. And just on the wages, I would imagine all of that business they did in the summer, considerable business, a lot of money, means that as things stand now, Norwich can probably, well, probably be all right come the end of the season. So while it'll save them a little bit of money getting his wages, it might be okay. That said, they're probably still banking on getting rid of Nelson. So there is maybe a caveat there. Let's move on, shall we? We are going to the under-23s this afternoon, and there's lots of other stuff. But time is racing away, so let's bring in some mailbag. Dave, you like reading out these bits.
Why?
So, yeah, don't you do? So let's try and do them as quick as possible. I would say do the top three there, and although they may not be quick ones.
Okay, Jonathan Parker, is it time we return to three centre-backs? Our full-backs aren't really up to playing at full-back. The likes of Lewis and Marshall would be
much
better, I think that's best to say. Much better deployed as wing-backs. Zimmerman or Godfrey in there too. Well, I mean, Closer certainly suits that back three. And I'd have thought for Lewis and Marshall, and if you want to look beyond that, Paslak, Pinto and Aarons would all potentially be better as wing-backs than proper full-backs.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. And I think Norwich City, I mean, it's coming back in vogue as well, the three at the back system. And it does offer something different tactically. And yeah, I think that's the point. I think Norwich City's full-backs are, for the most part, or wing-backs, whatever you want to call them, they're more comfortable with the three behind them and the freedom to attack. So it would make sense.
Oh, I wonder when he's going to bring it in, because Daniel does like it, and it probably suit having Godfrey and Zimmerman there as a back in the three. And I don't necessarily think, especially away from home, losing someone in midfield,
however,
would hurt them.
Would that mean that you need to compromise the interesting triumvirate that's developing between Hernandez, Pukki and Rhodes?
I don't think it would, because I think you could play a 3-4-3 You're playing without a number 10, but especially away from home, if you're turning the ball around quickly, which Norwich are doing away from home, to be honest. They're doing it in spells, but probably the difficult bit is the midfield mix, in terms of what you do with your two holders.
Would it be two holders? Would you play... I mean, does that mean Leitner just wouldn't get in the team?
No, you probably wouldn't have to play holders, to be honest. You could probably play Leitner and a Tetti, or Leitner and a Thompson in there. In fact, Thompson and McLean would do quite well, because you've then got quite a lot of legs.
And
Louis would do well at covering behind Kenny as well.
I think that would suit Kenny perfectly as well, you know, in the same way as closer in defence, being left footed. Mm-hmm. If you put him, well, perhaps even a 3-5-2 would suit that perfectly. But then, like you say, that triumvirate would have to be broken up front. And does it really suit Anel Hernandez sort of buzzing around Jordan Rhodes, or I don't know, it's a difficult one to put together. But yeah, 3-4-3 away from home, I certainly think, you know, you go to a tough place like Sheffield United, if you had Tetti and Godfrey, for instance, as the holders, then at least you're solid. You should still be in the game, shouldn't you?
I have to add, I don't think formation has played a part in any of Norwich's defeats so far this season, personally. But last season, I thought that was more of an issue. I do have a feeling, Paddy, and you might disagree with me, but that's my thinking.
Yeah, just another point, as everyone's obsessed with formations being symmetrical, but you proved at the weekend, Michael, that asymmetry might be coming back in.
Did I?
Yeah. How did I do that? Well, it's probably something I did by accident.
I think it was your prediction of Daniel Farke's formation. You had the midfield kind of jumbled up a wee bit.
Fluid,
that's me. Go on, what's another one, Dave?
Ian Laws, should Nelson be competing for a place? Nelson Oliveira, of course. A few goals and competition from him will help us and help himself get a new club. Inactivity and healthy competition for places helps neither of us currently.
That's a tough one. I think if a decision has been made in the corridors of power that Nelson's no longer going to be part of the squad or the club, then I think that would override any sort of tactical consideration there. But if you're looking at it just empirically in terms of what he can offer, he's very, very much a different option in terms of the way he plays. But yeah, I think it will be dictated by whatever his future is going to hold. And I think we've got strong indications as to what that might be.
If we're still here and he's still around the place come the game at Cardiff, then he should play at Cardiff. And also, if he's still here come the end of August and we're into September, he has to be brought back into the fold. Otherwise, it's completely pointless paying his wages. Until then, let's see what we get.
So you'd say the same goes for Russell Martin then? He should be involved at Cardiff if he's still here?
Yeah, probably. In that situation.
I mean, that could work one of two ways, though, couldn't it? Because having not played at all, if he was awful,
both these guys are hoping for moves away, so it wouldn't say much for them. And I don't think either of them would be like this if they were complete. I know they wouldn't be sharp because they haven't played, but to be out of shape completely would be a different level. I think they'll no doubt both pride themselves on being professional about how they're looking after themselves. One more.
I personally don't think Oliveira should be anywhere near it, because I think the more you see Jordan Rhodes, the more his failings of last season become more evident just from where he stands on the pitch, frankly. The Unthanked Kitchen. A person or or place. Either way, late substitutions. Why? We had tired Tetti legs on Saturday, so much so he had cramp and was underperforming. With so much talent on the bench, could the game have been saved for an earlier substitution, i.e. McGoldrick coming on, setting up the winner? Let me just remind you of what the subs were. I've got the pink in front of me. Steepman came on for Leitner in the 79th, Shrebeni on for Pookie in the 87th, and then Ben Godfrey on for Tetti, and I think it was the 91st, wasn't it? It was injury time. So.
Can I just point out that there's another sort of issue here with the balance of the bench? Like, in terms of the number of attacking players to defensive players, sometimes I feel it's a bit sort of weighted towards the defensive side. And let's face it, if you're trying to change a game, then you're not going to be bringing on defenders, are you? Unless you're trying to show it up. But you can have maybe one sort of wider full-back option and one centre-back option. And then I think, personally, with the seven substitutions that's facilitated, you should concentrate on having options that can be game-changers on your bench. I appreciate sometimes that's not easy in terms of numbers in the squad and such, but you've got players like Todd Cantwell who could figure and has proved, especially with what he did in the Netherlands last year, that he can make a difference.
Just in fairness to Todd, I think he was injured at the weekend, which is why he wasn't in the fold. But I do think that they're basically picking an 11, and then after that it's like, right, how many homegrown players do we need? And that's what's determining who's on the bench, which again still seems a remarkable situation to be in. But Yeah, Daniel, earlier subs, I think. I mean, he did do that at Birmingham, so it's not, you know, and he changed the game really effectively, albeit after they'd gone a goal behind at Birmingham. So, yeah.
Well, it didn't give Chrebeni much of a chance to do anything, did it, to turn the game? It was, I mean, they were under the cosh by that point, so whether it was a wise decision is quite debatable. But there were 8 home grain in total on Saturday, so they did have the room to bring another one in drop one of the homegrown out, sorry, if they felt it necessary.
Good stuff, Dave. Of course, as always, get your comments and questions in. You can help set the agenda in Mailbag in any future podcasts. All you need to do is get in touch with us on social media, or you can email us thepinken@archon.co.uk, generally on a Monday morning or over the weekend if you want. It'll be the first thing you do when you get home from Carrow Road. What the? And then send it to us and we'll just relay it word for word in the podcast, because that's how it works. Right, time rapidly running away still from us. The week ahead, Preston, Alec Neil, as you touched on, back at Carrow Road on Wednesday. Marcelo Bielsa's Leeds, high-flying 100%ers, top of the table at the moment on Saturday. Norwich is still winless in the Championship. This is nasty, Stuart. And what's it going to be like with the crowd? That's the other interesting thing. When social media is in meltdown, it takes a little bit longer to filter through, of course, to Carrow Road. But let's be honest, Norwich need to win one of these games at least.
I think so. I think if Norwich even come away from these, I mean, if it's 5 games without a win to begin the season, then that's going to be dangerous territory for Daniel Farke. I mean, even if the performances are there, then you're looking at it and you're thinking, I mean, the pressure's right on. You've got a derby around the corner. It's getting to difficult territory if that's the case. So yeah, I think Norwich do need to win one of these games, and it's not going to be easy because it's two different challenges. But I mean, if there's one person that knows Norwich inside out in this division, it will be Alec Neil. I mean, I know the squad has changed quite a lot, but he knows the culture around the football club, and he's consummate in his preparation always. And then Leeds are a bit of an unknown. That is fascinating. Bielsa going in there is absolutely fascinating. Not to also mention that the interviews are absolutely gold. About a minute of pidgin Spanish, and then Marcelo Bielsa going, yes. It's cracking. But yeah, fascinating to have a manager like that in the Championship. I think it's shown how this league has developed and become such a global entity now. Two difficult challenges there. Norwich, I think, need to win one of them. I think 1 or 2 points is not going to satisfy a fan base which is beginning to lose its patience.
It would be interesting if Norwich drew them both and then did beat Ipswich. That would probably be enough, but then with the unbeaten run against Ipswich, I'm almost tempting fate there. So, Dave, how do you see it?
Yeah, that would be enough. I just really hope they get the win against Preston, just to relieve some of this pressure, because it almost feels a little bit unjust that there's so much pressure on them at such an early stage when they have been competitive, and that it's not like we're looking at them thinking, well, they're in relegation trouble here. You know, they, as we said already, they could have won all 3 of those games. They just need a little bit of rub of the green, maybe. Let's hope they didn't use that up with the wasting of a very, very clear offside chance on Saturday. But yeah, I mean, Preston, I'm just having a quick look at their results. They won 1, drawn 1, lost 1. Beat QPR 1-0 at home on the opening day, then lost at Swansea, and then they let a lead slip twice on Saturday, drawing 2-2 at home with Stoke. So they've had an average start to the season, although that's a decent result against a very strong Stoke squad, of course, and Alex will have what is a very workmanlike squad bang up for it. They will look to really frustrate Norwich. So an early goal, as ever with this Norwich team on this Norwich squad, is probably going to have a massive bearing, and equally, as you say, could on the atmosphere around the game as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing. The Carrow Road atmosphere is going to be interesting, because there needs to be an atmosphere of supporting the team. But if that apathy sets in amongst the fans in the stadium, then that's when you begin to know that things are in really dangerous territory. The other thing that I just want to pick up on what you said, Dave. Alec Neil has his team, which, as you say, is workmanlike, all of those kind of adjectives, but it's kind of that way that you know that template works in this division. There's a certain element about the way that Norwich City are approaching it that seems idealistic and not capable of that sort of Championship, nitty gritty, grind it out type stuff. I mean, if you look, as you say, we've been competitive in all the games, but we've come away and we've got 1 point. So from the opening three. So with that in mind, maybe Norwich City need a bit more of that kind of championship steel. And they're definitely going to need to find that if they're going to be successful.
It's still so early in the season, though, isn't it? And we have already, you know, expanding on that point, we talked about Fulham a bit before the start of the season, didn't we? And that if you are going to play this sort of possession football, you've got to nail it in this division, haven't you? You've got to be the best in the division at doing it to get away with it. So Norwich are gambling by taking that sort of approach. But if it pays off, then you're in a good place to move into the Premier League. So you can see why it's sort of worth taking that gamble. But yeah, I mean, just to emphasise that point as well, I mean, if they were to somehow win both of these games, the tone of this sort of podcast, even if they lose at Cardiff, which is an irrelevance basically, ahead of the derby, will be completely, completely different.
Can't wait to do our Cardiff previews. It's going to be great. brilliant stuff, gents. Thank you so much. We'll have full live coverage of both of those games, Preston and Leeds, Wednesday night, Saturday afternoon. All the build-up, press conferences, all the reaction and analysis afterwards. Pinken.com is the place to be. Finally, as always, any other business? Have we missed anything else off? Dave?
No.
Yes, thank you. Stu?
I love Norwich. It's good to be back.
Listen to it. I love it. Are you enjoying yourself in Scotland, though?
Yeah, it's great, mate. It was a family-orientated decision to go home. I've done loads of fun work up there at various journalistic institutions and still doing a wee bit of commentary, so quite happy.
And you are in the latest Canaries Mag speaking to...
John Kennedy. Yeah, that was a brilliant interview. It was... John Kennedy, I believe, would have been the man, and this is maybe a bit of a bold call, and I know a lot of English people will splutter into their tea as they hear it, but I think John Kennedy would have got us over the hump to get to a major tournament. I really do. I think what Scotland have lacked over the course of the last sort of 5 to 10 years is a proper centre-half, and that's not casting aspersions on Grant Hanley or Russell Martin.
And a load of Norwich defenders.
A load of Norwich defenders, but John Kennedy was a Rolls-Royce air player, and he was going right to the top of the game. There was one point where European giants, AC Milan had just won the Champions League, they were looking at him. But I mean, he was going to have a stellar career. And it was just after he was coming off the back of, he got his Scotland debut after playing in a Celtic team that defied Barcelona at the New Camp with David Marshall behind him. Then he played in the Old Firm game, which Celtic won that weekend. Then he made his Scotland debut the following midweek, and the Romanian Guinea basically ended his career with a vile, petulant challenge, which John, despite bravely working hard to come back from various times, it was always sort of hindering him. He went to the very best of specialists. And in journalism, sometimes, like, what the reason we do this job, and I'm sure you guys will probably reflect this as well, is it gives you the chance to get a look under the bonnet of football and to maybe ask some questions to people that you've looked at and admired in the game. And I always wanted to ask John if he was bitter about how his career went as a result of that challenge, and he's not. The guy is, it was so uplifting speaking to him because he's very admirable in the way he looks at it. And I think Norwich City fans were unfortunately, I mean, they didn't even see the best of John Kennedy, and he came down here, and everybody I've spoke to always compliments what a wonderful defender and wonderful professional he was, and he loved his time down here. So it was a pleasure to speak to him about his time at Norwich and his career in general, and yeah, hopefully people enjoyed the piece in the mag.
Great stuff, Stuart. Yeah, that piece and a lot of other bits and bobs. I think me and yours truly, Dave, are in it, aren't we, somewhere or other?
A few times. Can just say, Hodgie, your description of the injury in that piece, a really, really well-written piece, but you describe all the injury that actually happened to his knee, you know, ligament and whatever. I can't remember off the top of my head. It really did make my toes curl. Yeah. It was a horrible injury, wasn't
it? That's the good stuff. Well, you can read that in the latest Pinken magazine. It is out now. It's got Daniel Farker on the front of it. Go and get it at your shops, or you can order it, I think, at pinken.com. Have a look and get that if you fancy some reading. There's an international break coming up, so you're clearly going to want to do some reading then, other than the rest of the time. Do that. Right. No any other business apart from that. That's good work. We are saying goodbyes. Thank you all for listening and getting involved. It's much appreciated. It is goodbye from Dave.
Goodbye
from Stuart.
Goodbye.
pleasure as always. And goodbye from me. Hello. Yep, goodbye. Remember Pinkin.com for all the latest Norwich City news, analysis, opinion and transfer insight. We have got this season covered and we'll be back every Monday one way or another to prove it. Make sure you get in touch, get involved, of course, because this is your podcast as much as it is ours. It is Carrow Road double header on the horizon this week. What's not to like about that? Enjoy it and we'll see you on the other side. Let's hope we're at least a few points better off by then too. On the Ball City.